The Lady of Lions, or, Love and Pride. Link 2H Pref. Preface. An indistinct recollection of the very pretty little tale, called The Bellows Mender, suggested the plot of this drama. The incidents are, however, greatly altered from those in the tale, and the characters entirely recast. Having long had a wish to illustrate certain periods of the French history, so, in the selection of the date in which the scenes of this play are laid, I saw that the era of the Republic was that in which the incidents were rendered most probable, in which the probationary career of the hero could well be made sufficiently rapid for dramatic effect, and in which the character of the time itself was depicted by the agencies necessary to the conduct of the narrative. For during the early years of the first and most brilliant successes of the French Republic, in the general ferment of society, and the brief equalization of ranks, Claude's high-placed love, his ardent feelings, his unsettled principles, the struggle between which makes the passion of this drama, his ambition, and his career, were phenomena that characterized the age, and in which the spirit of the nation went along with the extravagance of the individual. The play itself was composed with a twofold object. In the first place, sympathizing with the enterprise of Mr. MacReady, as manager of Covent Garden, and believing that many of the higher interests of the drama were involved in the success or failure of an enterprise equally hazardous and disinterested, I felt, if I may so presume to express myself, something of the brotherhood of art, and it was only for Mr. MacReady to think it possible that I might serve him in order to induce me to make the attempt. Secondly, in that attempt I was mainly anxious to see whether or not, after the comparative failure on the stage of the Duchesse de La Vallière, certain critics had truly declared that it was not in my power to attain the art of dramatic construction and theatrical effect. I felt, indeed, that it was in this that a writer, accustomed to the narrative class of composition, would have the most both to learn and unlearn. Accordingly, it was to the development of the plot and the arrangement of the incidents that I directed my chief attention, and I sought to throw whatever belongs to poetry less into the diction and the felicity of words than into the construction of the story, the creation of the characters, and the spirit of the pervading sentiment. The authorship of the play was neither avowed nor suspected until the play had established itself in public favor. The announcement of my name was the signal for attacks, chiefly political, to which it is now needless to refer. When a work has outlived for some time the earlier hostilities of criticism, there comes a new race of critics to which a writer may, for the most part, calmly trust for a fair consideration, whether of the faults or the merits of his performance. Dramatis personae. Beauséant, a rich gentleman of Lyons, in love with, and refused by, Pauline Descapelle's Mr. Elton. Glavis, his friend, also a rejected suitor to Pauline Mr. Meadows. Colonel, afterwards General, Damas, cousin to Madame Descapelle's, and an officer in the French army Mr. Bartley. Monsieur Descapelle's, a Lyonese merchant father to Pauline Mr. Strickland. Gaspar Mr. Didier. Claude Melnot Mr. MacReady. First officer Mr. Howe. Second officer Mr. Pritchard. Third officer Mr. Roberts. Servants, notary, etc. Madame Descapelle's Mrs. W. Clifford. Pauline, her daughter Miss Helen Fawcett. The widow Melnot, mother to Claude Mrs. Griffith. Janet, the innkeeper's daughter Mrs. East. Marion, maid to Pauline Miss Garrick. Scene, Lyons and the neighborhood. Time, 1795 to 1798. First performed on Thursday, the 15th of February, 1838, at Covent Garden Theatre. The Lady of Lyons. Or, Love and Pride, Act 1. Scene I. A room in the house of M. Descapelle's, at Lyons. Pauline reclining on a sofa, Marion, her maid, fanning her, flowers and notes on a table beside the sofa, Madame Descapelle's seated, the gardens are seen from the open window. Madame. Deschap. Marion, put that rose a little more to the left. Dash Marion alters the position of a rose in Pauline's hair. Ah, so. That improves the hair, the tournure, the je ne sais quoi. You are certainly very handsome, child. Quite my style, I don't wonder that you make such a sensation. Old, young, rich, and poor, do homage to the beauty of Lyons. Ah, we live again in our children, especially when they have our eyes and complexion. Pauline, languidly. Dear mother, you spoil your Pauline. Dash aside, I wish I knew who sent me these flowers. Madame. Deschap. No, child. If I praise you, it is only to inspire you with a proper ambition. You are born to make a great marriage. Beauty is valuable or worthless according as you invest the property to the best advantage. Marion, go and order the carriage. Exit Marion. Pauline. Who can it be that sends me, every day, these beautiful flowers? How sweet they are. Enter servant. Servant. Monsieur Beauséant, madame. Madame. Dis chap. Let him enter. Pauline, this is another offer. I know it is. Your father should engage an additional clerk to keep the account book of your conquests. Enter Beauséant. Beau. Ah, ladies, how fortunate I am to find you at home. Dash aside, how lovely she looks. It is a great sacrifice I make in marrying into a family in trade. They will be eternally grateful. Dash aloud, madam, you will permit me a word with your charming daughter. Dash approaches Pauline, who rises disdainfully. Mademoiselle, I have ventured to wait upon you, in a hope that you must long since have divined. Last night, when you outshone all the beauty of lions, you completed your conquest over me. You know that my fortune is not exceeded by any estate in the province, you know that, but for the revolution, which has defrauded me of my titles, I should be noble. May I, then, trust that you will not reject my alliance? I offer you my hand and heart. Pauline, aside, he has the air of a man who confers a favor. Dash aloud, sir, you are very condescending, I thank you humbly, but, being duly sensible of my own demerits, you must allow me to decline the honor you propose. Curtsies, and turns away. Beau. Decline. Impossible. You are not serious. Madam, suffer me to appeal to you. I am a suitor for your daughter's hand, the settlements shall be worthy of her beauty and my station. May I wait on M. de Scapels? Madame. Dis chap. M. de Scapels never interferes in the domestic arrangements, you are very obliging. If you were still a marquis, or if my daughter were intended to marry a commoner, why, perhaps, we might give you the preference. Beau. A commoner. We are all commoners in France now. Madame. Dis chap. In France, yes, but there is a nobility still left in the other countries in Europe. We are quite aware of your good qualities, and don't doubt that you will find some lady more suitable to your pretensions. We shall be always happy to see you as an acquaintance, M. Beauséant. My dear child, the carriage will be here presently. Beau. Say no more, madam. Say no more. Dash aside, refused. And by a merchant's daughter. Refused. It will be all over Lyons before sunset. I will go and bury myself in my chateau, study philosophy, and turn woman-hater. Refused. They ought to be sent to a madhouse. Ladies, I have the honor to wish you a very good morning. Exit. Madame. Dis chap. How forward these men are. I think, child, we kept up her dignity. Any girl, however inexperienced, knows how to accept an offer, but it requires a vast deal of address to refuse one with proper condescension and disdain. I used to practice it at school with a dancing master. Enter Damas. Damas. Good morning, cousin de Scapels. Well, Pauline, are you recovered from last night's ball? So many triumphs must be very fatiguing. Even M. Glavis sighed most piteously when you departed, but that might be the effect of the supper. Pauline. M. Glavis, indeed. Madame. Dis chap. M. Glavis? As if my daughter would think of M. Glavis. Damas. Heyday. Why not? His father left him a very pretty fortune, and his birth is higher than yours, cousin de Scapels. But perhaps you are looking to M. Beauséant, his father was a marquis before the revolution. Pauline. M. Beauséant. Cousin, you delight in tormenting me. Madame. Dis chap. Don't mind him, Pauline. Cousin Damas, you have no susceptibility of feeling, there is a certain indelicacy in all your ideas. M. Beauséant knows already that he is no match for my daughter. Damas. Pooh. Pooh. One would think you intended your daughter to marry a prince. Madame. Dis chap. Well, and if I did? What then? Many a foreign prince. Damas, interrupting her. Foreign prince. Foreign fiddlestick. You ought to be ashamed of such nonsense at your time of life. Madame. Dis chap. My time of life. That is an expression never applied to any lady till she is 69¾, and only then by the clergyman of the parish. Enter servant. Servant. Madam, the carriage is at the door. Exit. Madame. Dis chap. Come, child, put on your bonnet, you really have a very thoroughbred air, not at all like your poor father. Dash fondly. Ah, you little coquette. When a young lady is always making mischief, it is a sure sign that she takes after her mother. Pauline. Good day, cousin Damas, and a better humor to you. - going back to the table and taking the flowers. Who could have sent me these flowers? Excellent Pauline and Madame de Scapels. Damas. That would be an excellent girl if her head had not been turned. I fear she is now become incorrigible. Zounds, what a lucky fellow I am to be still a bachelor. They may talk of the devotion of the sex, but the most faithful attachment in life is that of a woman in love, with herself. Exit. Scene 2. The exterior of a small village inn, sign, the Golden Lion, a few leagues from Lyons, which is seen at a distance. Beau. Behind the scenes, yes, you may bait the horses, we shall rest here an hour. Enter Beauséant and Glavis. Bleu. Really, my dear Beauséant, consider that I have promised to spend a day or two with you at your chateau, that I am quite at your mercy for my entertainment, and yet you are as silent and as gloomy as a mute at a funeral, or an Englishman at a party of pleasure. Beau. Bear with me. The fact is that I am miserable. Bleu. You, the richest and gayest bachelor in Lyons? Beau. It is because I am a bachelor that I am miserable. Thou knowest Pauline, the only daughter of the rich merchant, Mons. De Scapels? Bleu. Know her? Who does not? As pretty as Venus, and as proud as Juno. Beau. Her taste is worse than her pride. - drawing himself up, no, Glavis, she has actually refused me. Bleu. Aside. So she has me. Very consoling. In all cases of heartache, the application of another man's disappointment draws out the pain and allays the irritation. - aloud, refused you. And wherefore? Beau. I know not, unless it be because the revolution swept away my father's title of marquis, and she will not marry a commoner. Now, as we have no noblemen left in France, as we are all citizens and equals, she can only hope that, in spite of the war, some English milord or German count will risk his life, by coming to Lyons, that this fidu roturier may condescend to accept him. Refused me, and with scorn. By heaven, I'll not submit to it tamely, I'm in a perfect fever of mortification and rage. Refuse me, indeed. Bleu. Be comforted, my dear fellow, I will tell you a secret. For the same reason she refused me. Beau. You. That's a very different matter. But give me your hand, Glavis, we'll think of some plan to humble her. Mille diables. I should like to see her married to a strolling player. Enter landlord and his daughter from the inn. Land. Your servant, citizen Beauséant. Servant, sir. Perhaps you will take dinner before you proceed to your chateau, our larder is most plentifully supplied. Beau. I have no appetite. Bleu. Nor I still, it is bad traveling on an empty stomach. What have you got? Takes and looks over the bill of fare. Shout without, long live the prince. Long live the prince. Beau. The prince? What prince is that? I thought we had no princes left in France. Land. Ha, ha. The lads always call him prince. He has just won the prize in the shooting match, and they are taking him home in triumph. Beau. Him. And who's Mr. Him? Land. Who should he be but the pride of the village, Claude Melnot? Of course you have heard of Claude Melnot? Bleu. Giving back the bill of fare, never had that honor. Soup, ragout of hare, roast chicken, and, in short, all you have. Beau. The son of old Alilnot, the gardener? Land. Exactly so, a wonderful young man. Beau. How, wonderful? Are his cabbages better than other people's? Land. Nay, he don't garden any more, his father left him well off. He's only a genus. Bleu. A what? Land. A genus. A man who can do everything in life except anything that's useful, that's a genus. Beau. You raise my curiosity, proceed. Land. Well, then, about 4 years ago, old Melnot died, and left his son well to do in the world. We then all observed that a great change came over young Claude, he took to reading in Latin, and hired a professor from Lyons, who had so much in his head that he was forced to wear a great full-bottom wig to cover it. Then he took a fencing master, and a dancing master, and a music master, and then he learned to paint, and at last it was said that young Claude was to go to Paris, and set up for a painter. The lads laughed at him at first, but he is a stout fellow, is Claude, and as brave as a lion, and soon taught them to laugh the wrong side of their mouths, and now all the boys swear by him, and all the girls pray for him. Beau. A promising youth, certainly. And why do they call him Prince? Land. Partly because he is at the head of them all, and partly because he has such a proud way with him, and wears such fine clothes, and, in short, looks like a prince. Bo. And what could have turned the foolish fellow's brain? The revolution, I suppose? Land. Yes, the revolution that turns us all topsy-turvy, the revolution of love. Bo. Romantic young Corydon. And with whom is he in love? Land. Why, but it is a secret, gentlemen. Bo. Oh. Certainly. Land. Why, then, I hear from his mother, good soul, that it is no less a person than the beauty of lions, Pauline de Scapels. Bo. And Glavis. Ha, ha. Capital. Land. You may laugh, but it is as true as I stand here. Bo. And what does the